south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Yeah, you know, last show I was talking about Argentina and how I'd never recommend it for a plan B. Nice place to go on vacation, but I'd never want to live, work, play, and or do business there. One big reason, they've got mandatory vaccines for everyone. You can't get out of it. You can't get residency. You can't get a driver's license. You can't register yourself or your kids at school. You can't even cross borders, that is, get out of the country if you haven't been certified that you're all pumped up. That, along with the fact that Argentina's had 50% inflation year over year. Imagine that. Plus, if you've got a U.S. dollar account in the bank there, they only let you take out $200 a month. So, as a permanent Plan B destination, my recommendation is forget about Argentina. Of course, people ask me all the time about their Plan B and what places to avoid here in Latin America. So, let's run down that list. First, Mexico, and for a lot of reasons. Number one, because it's a failed narco state. Number two, practically all officials and cops are corrupt. Of course, there's good and bad corruption. On the good or tolerable side is when you can pay a cop $20 for something to go away. Then there's the evil or bad corruption that permeates Mexico, where a cop will pull you over and take you to an ATM and have you withdraw all your money. But you knew that already, right? All right, let's talk about the next country that I wouldn't want to have my plan B in. Costa Rica, because it's first world expensive, and if you're a gringo, you're a target and you're going to get ripped off. From taxi drivers to lawyers, everyone's an expert at gouging gringos, even other gringos, especially other gringos. Nor do I recommend Panama. But only because it's first world expensive, too. Unless, of course, you choose to live way out in the boonies. But then you've got chicken buses rolling past your front door and blowing smoke 24/7 and driveway chickens next door. Though, you know, some gringos and expats who are on extreme budgets don't mind that style of living. It's just that it's a style of living that kind of goes back in time 30 or 40 or even 50 years. Nothing wrong with that, but there are better places than Panama. Oh, and for a permanent plan B, I don't recommend Belize either. Yes, I know a lot of gringos and expats are drawn there because it's the only country in Latin America that speaks English. That, you know, is all well and good, except for the fact that every single person I've ever known who's moved to Belize permanently has been scammed or robbed. In fact, you longtime listeners might remember me telling the story of a friend of mine who had never been to Belize before, and when he landed on the very first day, he was walking the beach by his hotel, and he got robbed at gunpoint. Goodbye, iPhone. And of course, I'd never recommend living in Cuba or Venezuela, for obvious reasons. And Brazil, it's a failed state too, aren't they all? Including every country in Europe and the U.S. too. But for me, the big stumbling block there is they speak Portuguese, and man, it took me 5 years or so to get my Spanish halfway decent. But I guess if you were in your 20s or 30s and headed to Brazil, and you didn't live in one of the big, chaotic, dangerous cities, you could very well do all right, but I'd say if you're over 40 or 50, you're better off sticking to a Latin American country that speaks Spanish. And remember, if you speak even just a little Spanish, there are at least 18 other Latino countries you can communicate in. But if you speak Portuguese, you're stuck with Brazil. Now, as far as Chile, or Chile, people ask me about that country all the time because it's relatively stable, peaceful, and with a low crime rate, except it too is becoming expensive, ramping up to first world levels. Besides that, they've got U.S. bases and troops there. And for me, that's a big turnoff, which brings us to Colombia. Also, if your plan B is to go to one of the gringoized towns like Medellin to live like a gringo, it is first world expensive. But worse yet, and this is bad, they've had U.S. bases going way back to when the failed drug war started. And the Colombian government announced just this week that they're deploying even more U.S. troops. Need proof? Let me paraphrase this article from Inside Latin America. It starts by saying, "The recent decision to send more U.S. troops into Colombia is a troubling one, always under the pretext to help against drug trafficking. On May 28, 2020, the U.S. Southern Command, Southcom, issued a statement that its first Security Force Assistance Brigade will arrive in Colombia with no limit set on its deployment." Then it says in a press release, according to Latin news service El Tiempo, "The head of Colombia's armed forces, General Luis Fernando Alvero, added details about the so-called anti-drug deployment of additional U.S. troops, saying the new U.S. troops will provide tactical advice to improve operations against drug trafficking. Improve what? What a load of crap. Either they just don't get it or they think the public is really stupid. Well, maybe we are. It's as if those maggots in the military bureaucracy actually believe their own bullshit. Then the article says these newly deployed U.S. troops will provide support in various districts, including Bajo Cauca, Cordoba, Catatumbo, Arauca, and the Pacific coast of Nariño, along with the national parks of Chiricabete, Sierra de la Macarena. Hey, Macarena, where have I heard that before? And there'll be U.S. troops in Catatumbo Bari, Nudo de Parmillo, and Sanquianga, to name just a few places that most of us have never been before, but will be occupied by U.S. troops that you up in the States will be paying for. Aren't you just overjoyed about that? Then it says the move is not unusual since U.S. troops have been deployed in Colombia ever since the so-called drug war began. And how about this? Here comes the real bullshit. It says U.S.-funded troops and plans to help fight criminal groups and armed insurgents in Colombia help local Colombian soldiers in their training, intelligence support, and tactical support during operations, which in the past have included, get this, aerial spraying of herbicide glyphosate in vast jungle and tropical areas used to destroy coca plants. And of course, mass spraying of glyphosate only affects coca plants, don't you know? It would never attack any other plants or living things or harm the environment, right? Or make its way into lakes, rivers, or groundwater supplies. No. Oh, and if you don't think U.S. forces aren't on the ground in Colombia, just visit any large Colombian port city, and you're bound to see U.S. warships docked there. Why? Because just this last April, the U.S. has doubled down on deployed naval warships in the Caribbean and the South American Atlantic coast, ostensibly to target narco traffickers who work in and out of Venezuelan waters. And where do those U.S. warships dock and take on supplies? Why, from that most favored nation state? Colombia. So there you have it. Reasons 2036, 7, and 8. Why I personally would never want to have my permanent plan be in Colombia. Of course, I could be wrong, but after being down here in Latin America 30 years and seeing more of what's happening south of the border than even most perpetual backpackers, well, I don't think I'm too far off on the Colombia thing. So, bottom line, when you finally decided you had enough and you're going to get the hell out of Dodge and you need to have that plan B, as far as I'm concerned, there's no better place to land than Latin America. But, you know, there's 20 countries in Latin America. And as for me, if I was just making the move right now and I just decided I was going to have a plan B, I'd rule out those aforementioned half a dozen countries. Though, that's not to say if you happen to be in one of those countries right now and you're already fully invested, and that is your plan B destination, that you can't have a very nice lifestyle. You can't. It's just that you shouldn't dive in without doing some research and knowing the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great. And you know, it might sound simplistic, but it's a great idea while you're still putting together your plan B. It's to take a simple old school piece of paper and divide it into two columns, pros and cons. Make a list and make sure the pros heavily outweigh the cons. And if you really want to dig deep and thoroughly analyze that plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one call with me and we can go through your entire plan. And of course, if you really want to drink from the fire hose, sign up for my Expat Insider Seminar. The next one's coming up a little over 2 months from now, starting Friday night, August 21st, finishing the following Thursday night, August 27th. To sign up and get all the details, go to expatplanb.com. And remember, as far as the early bird discounts, I'm running those till the end of June. So sign up before July 1st and you get a $500 discount off the regular price. Oh, and if you're thinking about coming down as a single and want to save $750, let me know and I'll hook you up with a same-sex roommate. And you know, down here in Latin America, there still are two sexes. Down here, they still honor science books. You're male if you've got an XY chromosome and you're female if you got double X. Hey, what can I tell you? They're old school down here. They still only classify gender four different ways. Male, female, gay, and lesbian. And you can't switch in midstream when you feel like it. Oh, and down here there are no snowflakes either, not just because there's no snow. It's just that Latinos, they don't understand the terminology at all, even when you explain it to them. They just think the first world's gone nuts. They got that right. which is one of the reasons why I consider myself extremely lucky that I landed here in Latin America well before social media, before participation trophies, social promotions, before the LGBTQWTF crowd, before the hashtag Everything Bozos arrived, before Homeland Security, Big Brother, snowflakes, ubiquitous metal detectors, and multiple vaccines. Yep, I arrived here in Latin America before any of that stuff even existed. So then was it just luck? Now, you longtime listeners know who Mr. B is, right? He's our resident expert on teaching English to Chinese kids online, making 20 to 30 bucks an hour. And for those of you who came down to one of my Latin American insider seminars, in the last couple of years anyway, you all met him and know what a great guy he is because he gives a little half-hour spiel at the seminar. He talks about himself, how he got down here, and how he got involved in that English teaching program. And for those of you who've never talked to Mr. B personally or heard him talk about his life at the seminar, he's got a long, strange past, as most of us who are down here in Latin America do. So then why am I bringing this up? Well, because I got an email from him that I think everyone ought to hear because you just might be able to relate to it. And it's something that has affected me too. So here goes. And in the end, if it strikes a chord with you and you want to respond yourself, shoot me an email, theexpatfinals@gmail.com. He says, "Hey, Johnny, I have to rant here and I don't know a lot of people in Guatemala, so I'll rant to you. And maybe a few of your listeners can help me understand this. I believe I told you the last grade I completed back in the U.S. was the sixth grade. I tell everybody. I don't keep it a secret. Yes, I have a GED. I barely passed, but I must confess, I get a little upset when people tell me how lucky I am. You know, I didn't get where I am by accident, but it seems you can never convince people of that. I think, Johnny, the reason I get upset is that people don't recognize that I prayed, got off my ass and researched, studied, learned, disciplined myself, saved money, sacrificed and made moves to live in the paradise I am now in. I've done all that and I've accomplished a lot, and they tell me I'm lucky. It's like I was walking along, tripped on a crack, fell off a mountain and landed in a comfortable, beautiful lifestyle. Like I bought a scratch-off card and won the lottery. I don't get it. Do you? Thanks for listening. Signed, Mr. B." All right, thanks for that, Mr. B. But you know, you're not the Lone Ranger on that one. If it makes you feel any better, I personally had zero in my bank account till I was around 30 years old. In fact, when I look back, I didn't even have a life till I was 30 years old. Except for having some fun here and there playing in a band, the rest was, well, a grind. Till I was just about 30, all I did was go to school, come home, go to work, and those summer vacations you get when you're going to high school or university, well, I worked. My dad had connections, though not very good ones. He'd get me in on the Chicago Garbage Department or Street Department Dead Dog Crew. Yep, they've got a dead dog crew. What do you think happens to those dogs dead on the side of the road? Well, they have a little truck that goes around and picks them up and takes them to the dump, and I had that job. Yep, and it's an olfactory delight, especially in the heat of the summer. Then it was back to university again, and when I got home at 5 or 6, I'd head to Kohl's department store, and I'd stock shelves from 7 till midnight, and on Friday and Saturday nights, usually play a gig at some club in Chicago. And on Sundays, well, between the ages of 18 and 22, while I was going to engineering school, I'd try to sleep late and catch up on homework. They give you tons of homework in engineering school. Then at 22, I got my undergrad in engineering and bought a fixer-upper house for 50 grand, borrowing 5 grand from my grandma for the 10% down payment. And I spent the next year of Sundays remodeling the place. New roof, new furnace, new gutters. I tuck-pointed the whole place. It was brick. Redid the electric and the plumbing. And I refinished the wooden floors and every stick of woodwork, including the doors. The house was built in 1919, so it had beautiful wood all through it. Except, you know, all the wood was varnished and painted and cracked and checkered. All the while, I kept going to school and working. And finally, when I was just about 30, things started coming together for me. No more school, no more manual labor. I had a professional career. But when I look back at it now, I could have completely eliminated or flushed those first 30 years of my life down the tubes and had nary a regret. Meanwhile, most of my high school buddies who were in the college-bound classes like I was, you know, back then, they kind of separated the classes into dumb, average, and college-bound. Anyway, a whole lot of my smart high school friends decided they wanted to work a couple of years at one of the big manufacturing plants like Chrysler, Caterpillar, John Deere, and Case. Back then, there were tons of factory jobs. And you know what? About a year after high school, I had run into these guys. They all had really fabulous muscle cars, GTOs, Roadrunners, Hemis. I was jealous. I had a 63 Rambler Classic. Even so, no one laughed or made fun of it, because back then, just to have a car was a big thing. And my high school buddies, they were busy working factory jobs, getting married, having kids, buying houses on time, jacking up their credit cards. And me, as usual, I was plugging away at school, working nights, playing in the band. I was in a different groove, grinding away. Oh, and that 63 Rambler, I think I paid a whole $350 for it. It's funny, too, because probably most of you listening to this show don't even know what a Rambler is or was. So anyway, when I hit around 30, that's when my life started opening up and I had the dough to travel and save. And you know, my plan back then was to go around the world for 1 year, come back, work in the States, and settle down. But I ended up liking Latin America so much it became my plan B, my permanent plan B. And of course, you know, for the first 10 or 15 years, people told me I was nuts, I was going to come back with my tail between my legs. They thought I would disappear or get kidnapped. My friends and relatives couldn't believe it. They thought I'd lost my bearings. Of course, they'd never been down to Latin America before, except for maybe Cancun and Tijuana. And then, probably around 10 years ago now, right when I first started this radio show, all of a sudden, just like Mr. B is experiencing right now, all my friends and relatives are saying how lucky I was. Somehow I won the lottery. I was born lucky. Never considering that most of the first 30 years of my life were just boring drudgery that led up to a point where I could break free from all that permanently. I have to say, all through my university years leading up to a doctorate and all that, it would always amaze me when I'd walk through the student lounge or student cafeteria on campus. It seemed like fully 3/4 or even 9/10 of the students in there were just screwing off, having fun, playing games, watching TV, skipping classes, figuring out where the party was going to be that night. Of course, almost none of these guys were in the hard sciences either, because you just can't live that kind of endless party scene when your career path is mathematics, physics, biology, engineering, etc., etc. Of course, I had a few buddies who were taking liberal arts degrees like journalism, and I couldn't understand how they could show up on campus day after day with hangovers and still graduate, but they did. And you know, there were times back then I thought maybe I was the idiot. I just wasn't having any fun at all at the university. However, I wasn't about to switch careers and dumb myself down because, for one, I had a full boat engineering scholarship, so I wasn't going to toss that in the weeds. You never know what the future holds, so at least when you have a scholarship, you know what you have to do for the next couple of years. You tough it out whether you like it or not, because, you know, if you don't succeed, you'll end up working in a factory. At least that's how it went way back when I was going to university. It's not like today when so many people don't need college degrees at all because there's the internet. You can find a niche there. But way back when there was no internet, graduating from university was something rare. It was a way out of mediocrity. Of course, these days, with an estimated 40% of U.S. adults having some kind of degree, that means a bachelor's degree today is equal to what a high school degree was back in the 70s. But still, people tell me all the time how lucky I am, though I rather like to think of it as a matter of probability. Like old Benny Franklin once said, isn't it funny? The harder I work, the luckier I get. Now, as for me, if I never would have taken that trip around the world, where would I be today? I'd probably be on lockdown in Chicago, be on 5 prescription medicines, and have a half dozen heart stents. I certainly never would have stumbled into Latin America. So was it luck, karma, or a belated payback for the first 30 years of my life, which really weren't bad or traumatic, but a real grind? But you know, when you're in a groove, even if it's a grind, you find a way to keep going because you know there is an end in sight. So, Mr. B, you had your rant. That's mine. Which reminds me of what Rodney Dangerfield once said. He said, people look at me, look at my life, and say I'm lucky. I tell them, you know what? It took me 50 years to become an overnight success. So, bottom line, Mr. B, none of us comes out of the egg fully formed. And unless a person's dropped on his head as a kid, we all have a chance to do things right and get ahead in the long run. And for those of you who have been dropped on your head, there's always a career in politics. All right, moving on. You know, sometimes I hammer a bit on millennials, Gen Xers, and Yers. I guess I've struck a nerve because emails are piling in on that subject, like this one. Dear Johnny, I'm Lucy, a millennial who just returned to New Jersey after living the past 3 years in Belgium. I know 4 languages and worked as a translator for a big European transnational. But Europe, as you might imagine, is falling apart, so I left. Only to find the U.S. is falling apart too, so my plan B is well underway. My final destination? Either Guatemala or Ecuador. Johnny, you know, a lot of things are bothering me, but one that really gets me going is Antifa. And it's funny, most people who are in Antifa don't even know what a fascist is. Did you know that in Europe, some 90% of left activists are millennials and Gen Yers who still live with their parents? I know. I live there and have spoken with many young protesters right outside my home in the business district of Brussels. Speaking of millennials, of which I'm one, it's worth noting that universities have become breeding grounds for their terrible ideas. And not just in the U.S., in Europe too. So then, what about all the protesters in Europe? The German newspaper Bild, B-I-L-D, revealed that 92% of activists in Germany and Europe still live with their parents. This can also be seen in the protests in the States, where so many coordinators of the violent demonstrations were escorted by their parents when they were brought to court. In short, Johnny, the regular common working people don't have the time or inclination to stand outside of buildings, protest, and carry signs. Are those protesters packing bag lunches? No way. They eat at corporate junk food places like McDonald's, who actually give handouts to protesters. They give out freebies to people who just might come back at night and loot the place. Johnny, we all know how people who live with their parents have all the time in the world. They want free stuff without the sweat, toil, and discipline that's involved. They want helicopter money and don't have household bills to pay like the rest of us. Don't you resent that they wield so much media attention and power? They who contribute so little productivity to society and complain so much? To me, it just makes getting out of Dodge and working on that Plan B option all the more urgent. I just wish I would have figured it out sooner. However, I fully realize what's happening now. I was awakened just this last year, as a matter of fact. And no, not only can we not fix the economic degradation, political lunacy, and mental sickness of America, but we can't isolate ourselves from it either by hunkering down and prepping. Not that I haven't tried it myself. I've always been somewhat of a prepper in spirit and was happy and self-congratulatory about it. Like everyone else, I would grimace when I saw things falling apart on TV, but I felt I was pretty much immune since I was a backpacker in my early 20s and always had a bug-out bag ready and waiting in the closet. I knew I could just bug out on a moment's notice, and I've seen many countries that way. For your information, I'm divorced. Thank God no kids, or that really would have screwed up my plan B. I can't imagine anyone who's aware these days would ever consider having a kid. And when I see pregnant women on the news and in the street, I can't help thinking what a rough life they're in for. For your information, Johnny, my ex was an Italian stallion, an Italian European who'd never been to the States, who I discovered had multiple girlfriends online. So if you thought these kinds of guys only existed in Latin America, you're mistaken. But I digress. Ha ha. And you know, Johnny, for a long time, since I speak four languages fluently, I felt I was insulated from harm because I could just bug out, go to most any country, and sort of hit the ground running. But now I know it's a mistake to think you can live in a nice, cozy, protected spot, smack in the middle of Dodge. Because in the end, you're still in Dodge, whether it's Belgium or New Jersey, or anywhere in the first world. Hope to make it to your seminar in August, but I might have to skip that one and join in on the next. Always look forward to your latest show. Signed, Lucy K. P.S. If you're looking for a translator, I'm your guy, or girl, or person. Call me anything, but don't call me a snowflake. You know, I never met a single snowflake in Belgium who wasn't an American traveling on his parents' dime or credit card. All right, then comes this email on the same subject from Herbert. And coincidentally, like Mr. B, he talks about being lucky and unlucky. Listen to this. Dear Johnny, those poor, poor millennials. I'm talking about people ages 25 to 40. How unlucky they are. The world is collapsing around them and their bubble cocoons aren't holding up. All of them have a disease. They're infected with affluenza. It's a sickness you get as a millennial growing up. And now they're faced with the prospect of actually making a living. They'll never make the kind of dough their parents made, so they're left clueless, depressed, and with no money to continue to pay their shrinks. Even though they're living at home, their advancing age disqualifies them from their boomer parents' insurance. Oh, Johnny, I feel so sorry for them. as they max out their credit cards at the iStore, hit up their boomer parents for loans they'll never repay, and as they cry in their soy lattes and text their sorrows feverishly on their iPhone 10s to their 200 equally depressed Instagram friends. With their comfort shoes almost 6 months old now, what a tragedy. And that two-year-old car is just so embarrassing to drive in public. And the color, I'm just so sick of it. What's happening to them is just not fair. We need another Obama. I can see why they're pissed. They showed up at their offices, performed adequately, and stayed in their cubicles till exactly 5 o'clock. But they did not get that promotion within the first 2 months. What a slap in the face. After showing up every single day on time and without a single participation trophy, how will they ever face their 200 Facebook friends? Never fear, though. Millennials have an ace up their sleeve. Their boomer parents are getting old and fat, and they're on a poop load of prescription drugs. Statistics say they'll pass soon enough, so at least you'll get the house. Good thing old boomers pay up their mortgages, huh? Trick is to treat those geezers nice, extra nice. Then Mom will leave you the Volvo and Dad the Hilux pickup. I know you wouldn't want to actually drive either one of them, but they're both paid up. Should be able to trade them, even Steven, for that black custom Mini Cooper. All in all, millennials have got good parents. They've got no debt. That means most millennial kids will be set when they pass. Oops, gotta go now, Johnny. Someone's at the door. It's the UPS guy with another half dozen Amazon Prime packages for my millennial kid. About time, too, with this coronavirus thing. They're taking like 3 days to deliver. Time to take a pic and post it. Anyhow, Johnny, isn't it funny on how the most whiny and self-absorbed generation in history should consider itself unlucky? Was wondering, though, do they have millennial Latinos? I mean, as a general class of unlucky so-and-sos as we have in the States? All right, Herbert, to answer that question? Sure, just by age designation, there are millennials. But they're not millennials as you know them, except maybe the 2-5% who went to bilingual helicopter expensive schools and speak English, entitled children of the rich and upper classes who are gringo wannabes. Of course, they identify with first world kids they see on cable TV and Netflix. However, one commonality here in Latin America is that kids almost always live with their parents till they get married. But in almost all other respects, millennials here in Latin America have little in common with millennials up north. Except for that 2-5% of rich kids, millennials here don't live in a protective bubble. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2-5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.